Yeah, so Dr. Perez will be telling us.
Here in UT Austin, and in the 1616 Guadalupe building in the information science. And I work with the Department of Biostatistics, and we promote biostatistics. In general, I wear two hats. It's the hat of biostatistics across the U.S., and then my department had to join our department. But in general, the presentation, what I'm going to do is I am going to blend why biostatistics in the U.S. versus, and then what do we have in our institution if you want to join us in that direction. So it's just to give you an idea of where we are in biostatistics and why biostatistics. And the idea is that I want you to think about it and in trying to consider a career in biostatistics. So I want to get to know you a little bit. So how many are you in the undergraduate program right now? So there are a few of them, a lot of those of you. What majors are you guys?
Math,
all of you? Okay. And then some of you may be thinking in master's or doctoral program, either in math or in another career field. So the purpose is for me to inform you what is biostatistics and trying to make you think about the career in biostatistics, because you need the training that we need in order to go that route. So that's the purpose of the presentation. So what is biostatistics? So it's basically how I explain it to my mom so that she doesn't get a headache. It's mathematics in biostatistics, which is bio is in health, in anything that is alive. So it could be human beings, it could be agriculture, plants that are alive, or there is also any animal that is in there. But the main thing that we're doing in biostatistics, especially in the U.S., is applied to human beings. So it's either in odontology, nursing, medicine, genetics, anything that is related to human beings. That's what is the biostat part. So statistics is a branch within math, but then when we put the biostatistics, it's because we are applying those methods to life, to things that are alive in general. Okay? So we need a lot of mathematics, for sure, statistics, computational skills, biology concepts, and we can understand. And if we did math, we can do why we are saying we promote that as biostatistics. So biostatistics handles a lot of the information, analyzes information to inform the human beings, and that's why the design and how do we apply those mathematical concepts within the health science is what is so important, because it makes an impact in the people that we help, right? In the past, there was a concept that it was biometry, and it was confused because of all the fingerprinters and all of that, and how all the CSI movies come on, and how to determine any information about any possible crime, it was related to DNA or fingerprinting. So it started by the term biometry. But it goes translating to biostatistics because it's a range of topics in biology in terms of bio, anything that is alive, right? So that's what we are going to basically connect. So what's the difference between statistics and biostatistics? So in statistics, you can apply those techniques, but usually those techniques are not restricted to things that are alive. So light bulbs or computers or industry or quality control, then those are not elements that are within the bio alive situation. So that's why it's a separation between statistics and biostatistics. Okay? So what do we do? And in terms of science and statistician as well, I took a lot of I in my career part, I went math and statistics in the first 2 years, and then after that, we split it there. So you guys have a different experience, but that's how I got trained. So in statistics, we went from a sample to the population from where we extract that sample. Okay, so we collect data, organize it, analyze it, and draw conclusions. Okay, so that's the easy sample to do that. So what are examples of real life that happen in the of air pollutants in a community? So like, for example, in Houston, there is a lot of the channel that it goes from the Atlantic Ocean to the city. It gets a lot of air pollution, or just even the traffic pollutant, how that affects the community, how that it affects us. So that is one of the examples of what can biostatistics do there. So when we test a new drug, like every single drug that we have is a medication, right now in the market by FDA. FDA, in order to put it in the market, will require the pharmaceutical company to evaluate what is the safety amount. So when you say, I have to give this person 80 milligrams or 100 milligrams or 150 milligrams or whatever, is it biostatistician who came out with a mathematical model to know why 80, why 100, why 150? So you see, it's not a clinician who knows that. It's the statistician or the biostatistician who came up with the model and developed the method who came up with those kind of points of what's the amount. So another thing is go and test it and evaluate. It's like, okay, you randomize to people who had that amount of treatment and the others who didn't have that amount of treatment. And you see if the effect of the treatment makes a difference on those participants with disease, or it doesn't do that. Now with the genetic traits, now we are trying to detect which genes are associated with what disease to try to target and minimize risk through there, right? So other examples, like what are bad health outcomes and how to differentiate, like, for example, teenagers that are alcohol users or tobacco users, how do we differentiate their behaviors in comparison to other kids who are there? So what are the triggers for all of that? Okay? There is also intervention that we can do for obesity, for this sexual behavior. Right now I'm doing a project with one of your faculty. We are putting gardens in the schools, and we are trying to promote that the children who are in second, third, and fourth grade of elementary school, they grow their own vegetables and fruits so that we can prevent kids to be less obese. How? By then cultivating their own food, cooking fruits and vegetables, and promoting healthy living. So that's, for example, but we don't know if that will work, so we have to randomize the kids and randomize parents and figure it out if we can change the behavior of those children and if that will work or not. Okay? Another intervention that I am working right now is in Parkinson's disease. So that disease doesn't have a cure. So we are trying to find is a treatment that at least will minimize the progression of the disease. So now we have to randomize people to a usual treatment versus a better treatment. So it will be unethical, like, do not give them a treatment given that they have the disease. Okay? So there are tons of collaboration areas where pediatrics, pain, renal failure, rheumatology, genetics, emergency medicine, fractures, cardiovascular disease, anything that is related with any part of the human being, we have a nudge to work with. Okay? So what are the methodological areas? So there is tons of statistical components that are needed within those areas. Yesterday I was listening to a presentation about right now everybody in their phones are collecting data about movement. So we can collect easily how many minutes are we moving, and like if I move my hand, I am moving in reality 3 dimensions. So now I will have a 3-time series going on simultaneously, and maybe I can predict association with health outcomes like a heart attack or a stroke. Can I predict with those measurements anything of that? So there is a lot of statistical tool that we can use that. For example, in health economics, is how much it costs to prevent a debt, or how much it costs to do that intervention that is effective, right? So those type of reports with economics and statistics is also making sense. Meta-analysis is like, do I trust so much information that is in the literature? How do I analyze a collection of published articles? What is the final evidence based on those publications? So those are the type of analysis that we do, okay? So let's think about it now in a career. So in this case, I have the website that is called jobsrated.com, and I just looked at it this morning. And the statistician is one of the best, 20 best occupations in the U.S. right now. So why is that designed? Because it has a stable market and a very good job pay. So that's good. So there is, you can go into academia, you can go to industry, you can go into government. There are very few people that does consultant, but they do very well. Okay? Also. So there is a lot of institutions that are seeking biostatisticians all the time. I will show you a website right now where you can, there is no time that there is no a job posting for this, okay? And you go to the University of Florida, everybody's posting jobs related to statistics, so this is a very good situation. The situation is not bad in the U.S., but even in around the world, it's worse. So if you go to any country, you are going to find a job as a biostatistician. So you want to travel internationally. Also, you can work in collaboration with Europe or clinical trials in Europe also, where you have a comparison between U.S. and the other clinical trials in Australia or here. So there is also the catch that you don't need to be as isolated in one single situation. Okay? People in the government, like in Washington, that are always needing biostatisticians. The Food and Drug Administration, especially with all the treatments and medications, that is not going to be away. We are trying to get new evidence regarding tobacco regulatory science, like e-cigarettes and smokeless tobacco, all of the new emerging products regarding tobacco. Those type of things are needed, statisticians, to give evidence to inform the agencies, and they can change the policy into the country, okay? The National Center for Health Statistics, you could be more familiar, the National Institute of Health, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Agriculture, etc. So there is a lot of that. So if we go to private sector or industry, there are tons of pharmaceutical companies that are always asking, hey, do you have any student that you can recommend to hire? Google is also the other company that they need data scientists in biostatistics to manage the amount of information from the internet. So there's also a lot of information, and if you like more in the computer side, there is software development. So to create new methods on all the statistics within this software, that is also available to you. WHO, any nonprofit organization, they are also interested, not only here in the U.S., but around the world also. Okay? If you like academia, so then the world is in colleges and secondary schools, and universities, in departments of mathematics, social science, economics, or you can go into academia within the research teaching institutions where they need also biostatisticians in high demand. So let's talk about. So we want to get closer about you. So this is a trajectory right now, and I have from 1995 through 2013, and then the last number that is on the chart is the last survey that we did in 2014. So what is the starting salary if you got a doctoral degree in biostatistics? So the median is around $100,000, so to start. And then the 75th percentile is 17. So that's not a bad beginning, right? So how do I become a biostatistician? What skills do I need? So we need math. That's why we are here. Okay, so that's a good thing. You need to understand math, statistics, and science in general. And a problem-solving skills is a career that basically do analysis, but it's as a teamwork. It's not as an individual work. I need to collaborate with people that are that do not have a clue about math, but that I am willing to learn about this topic, and they are willing to help me out to understand so that I can help them to solve their problems. So this is an isolation, but no isolation, because you should be able to communicate verbally and in writing with people who are not mathematicians, who don't have the training in any math. They never took in an algebra, right? So that's it. And we have a major in mathematics. That is something that is below also, but those skills are needed there. Okay? So how do I prepare the journey from my undergraduate degree to a doctoral degree if I want to go all the way? What do we need? Calculus as much as you can, the most you take, the greatest. Linear algebra is a requirement across any program in the U.S. or anywhere in the world. So computing programming skills, statistics, if you take it, that's a plus. If not, you are good. And real analysis and advanced calculus is desirable, but it's not mandatory in any of those. Okay? What do you need to take? The GRE, that's required. And then if you don't have to, there is a course right now by Harvard University. And those institutions, you apply right now from December to March, and then you can do a training during the summer to train you what is biostatistics, and they will pay you. The only thing that they don't pay you is to travel, but they will pay you where to live, books, and the training. But they don't pay you to get there. So if you are interested, you can apply that, and we can talk about. I will show you where to find that information. There is another conference that is the Inner Diversity Conference, and this is a website. Basically, right now you register the conferences this March here in Austin. So you can attend also that conference, and it's free. You get a free lunch. It's a Sunday, and you learn more about programs and networking that likes statistics in there. There is also this Infinite Possibilities Conference where they promote that, and again, there is monies for you to attend if you apply for those funding. Okay? So this is the summary of what is the summer training of statistics, and the website is in the last row here. Basically, it is a T15 training program where the U.S. is investing money for you to attend this. The only caveat is that you have to be a U.S. citizen or permanent resident. If you are not, then we can talk about some other options for you. So let's suppose that now you finish your undergraduate degree, and then how do I cover my expenses when I am in graduate school? So there are positions that are called teaching assistant positions, graduate assistant positions, research fellowship, training grants, and training grant for pre-doctoral and postdoctoral degree. So usually you are familiar with the first three, because this is how you do work here. And also, you are a TA or you are a GA for someone, right? But what I want to point out is the number four. So the training grant for doctoral degrees is the U.S. government, through the president, have money separated only if you do a doctoral degree in biostatistics. So they are going to pay for you to take a class, to do a doctoral degree in biostatistics. Okay? So those are called the T32 awards, and they are institutional or they could be individual. So you can apply as an individual and say, I want you to pay me to do my doctoral degree. And you can apply individually, or you can apply to one institution who has the doctoral programs. And then they will grant the monies. So one of those institutions is ours. So we have that training grant, and we are only four in the country who have it right now. But those monies are available through that National Institute of General Medical Sciences. Okay? So what do I need in order to apply for those monies? Again, you're a citizen or permanent resident. You have to be accepted into the PhD program. Master level is not sufficient. We need the doctors. We need you to become a doctor, so that's why the government says, yes, I can pay you, but only you do a doctoral degree. It's not enough the money. Okay? You have to have a bachelor's in order, you have to finish your bachelor, right, to get there. And then you have to be full-time as a student because the demand is so high in biostatisticians. The country says, yes, we are going to give you this money, but you only need you full-time work to that because we need you out of here and graduating and helping us right now. So that's where the full time is needed. Now, the only caveat is that you cannot take another position within the institution that you are there. Okay? There are other biostatistical societies, and these are the websites of those societies that they can provide information on more summer programs and more employment opportunities around the world. The last one, the ASA, is the one that is American Statistical Association. They will show you every single program, every comparison between programs across all this, the U.S. So you can do a training program at the master level. There is no financial support for the master level. We have financial support for the doctoral level across the U.S. And usually what it happens is you have to take at least 2 years courses, then take a qualifying exam, either raw, oral, written, or both. Like, for example, in our case, we use both. And then you have to do a dissertation, which is a thesis finishing up, and it takes another 2 years. So it will take you 4 years. So it's an investment of 3 to 4 years that you have to make before you can get into the market. But the payoff is really good. So you see, so it's like you are thinking in really being tied for 3 to 4 years, but at the end, the pay is. So that's the caveat there. Okay. Now that I give you, and I just promoted the program, no matter where you are in the U.S. So I want to give you what do we have here in our institution, which is the Health Science Center at Houston. And basically, it's the largest medical center in the world where the training team comes from. And our School of Public Health is one of 6 schools within the system. We are located in 6 campuses, so that's why we have one campus here in Austin, Brownsville, Dallas, El Paso, and San Antonio. But the biostatistics program is only in Houston because the large number of faculty is there. I'm the only one here in Austin, but we have 23 faculty in Houston. And there is another faculty in Dallas and another faculty in San Antonio. Okay? So we are one of the top schools of public health in the U.S., and we support 18 healthcare institutions and 6 supporting organizations like MD Anderson Cancer Center, Baylor College of Medicine, etc. So I have an office there and here, but the majority of the time I'm here working with people here in Austin. Okay? So what kind of degrees we offer? So we offer a Master's of Public Health, which is called an MPH. Basically, it's a basic professional degree with a concentration in biostatistics. It's a Master of Science, where you are required to take a statistical theory, methods, research designs, and analysis, and it takes you 2 years to complete, and then you can do a minor in another field, like epidemiology or healthcare systems or behavioral interventions, okay? And then we have the Doctor of Philosophy, which is definitely, it's more advanced statistical theory, is to be independent, for you to be independent, right? So you have to know a lot of that about application, statistical consulting, and independent research. It takes 2 to 3 years beyond the master program, and then you need one line. You need to become familiar with either epidemiology or health promotion, and you need to do a dissertation. Okay, so what do we have? So these are some of the researchers that are currently working right now with us in our institution, okay? The most important one is usually the ones that are known, which is the Coordinating Center for Clinical Trials. So we have a center that runs the clinical trials in the country. Like, for example, the clinical trials to evaluate the we are the ones who run it. The Parkinson's disease, we run it. So, for example, we are analyzing data that is coming from 45 institutions in clinical or hospitals in the U.S., but we, in our center, is who is the critical mass to analyze that data. So that is a very attractive thing, right? Early treatment of retinopathy of prematurity in babies is also that is happening in our institutions. So there is a lot of intervention trials and really valid data, and the Institute of National Institute of Health is putting a lot of money that we're producing evidence to evaluate the treatments, right? So that's it. So these are some of the faces of my coworkers that we work in the faculty, and if you want to look at each one of us and look at what we do and what projects do we do, then this is the website for that. Okay? Computational resources. Well, the good thing is we are in the same system than you are with the UTLC, so we get access to here to the TAC as well. So we get a lot of high-performance computing services from here and also from what we have there. So there is a lot of packages and information that we have available for that. So what are the requirements? So basically, these are the minimum requirements for the MPH program. We require only one calculus, a lot of strong methods in math. For the MS program, we need at least 3.0 average in the GPA. And then calculus and linear algebra. The main one is linear algebra, because we know that in order to take the linear algebra, you took some calculus as well. Okay? In the PhD program, we have two options. So either you can enter after getting an MS degree, or a straight from your bachelor. So we have those two options. Okay? But it takes, of course, so if you come with a college degree, it will take you 3 to 4 years. If you come with a master's, it will take you 3 years only, right? So it will take you 2 years more, after the master's. So it depends on where are you. So that's why, like, the direct admission is a little bit extra time than if you come with a master's program, okay? So we want calculus and we want linear algebra. That's basically what we are looking at. And multivariable calculus is what we want. GRE, what do we want? So we want verbal and quantitative. Of course, is the largest percentile, so we have the preferred score. That doesn't mean that it's mandatory, but it's what we prefer, okay? If you are an international student, we need a TOEFL of greater than 86. And the deadline is March 1st right now. We just passed the deadline 2 days ago for the incoming fall. In December 1 was the deadline for those who want to apply for new students' scholarship, which is different than what I'm talking about with the training grant, because the new students' scholarship is like if you are a new student and you got one of those new, then you get in-state tuition immediately, like what should happen here in UTLC. So that's a good thing, okay? So how do you apply? So you apply through this institution that is called SOFAS. And then basically you submit your application, you put your CV there, and then you have to ask for 2 letters of recommendation to your faculty here. And then you have to request transcripts to be mailed out to SOFAS, including the GRE. And basically you pay the fee, I think that is $50 for review of the application. And the website is there if you want the full detail, okay? So these are the financial support that I was talking about. So the government wants to pay you, but they don't pay well before you finish the degree. So it's only $22,920 per year. So plus the tuition. So the training grant pays the tuition plus pays you the stipend. So this is the stipend amount. So it's around $1,100 per month that is paid. You get the training grant. Then it pays for books, computer, insurance, and attending one scientific meeting. So it's only a travel for $300. It's a little amount, but it's something to go somewhere. The other the Dean Scholarship Program, that's the one that I'm talking about, the top one, because if you win one of those scholarships, then to pay the international one, and then you don't have to work for that semester in order to receive the in-state tuition. Then the teaching is $30,000 to $40,000 per year, and the research scholarships are similar for that. Those some are needed for U.S. citizens and others for non-U.S. citizens. So that's why this is the only one, the training grant is the only one that it requires to be a U.S. citizen or permanent resident to be there. Okay? So how much it costs this? So in our institution, we're one of the cheapest, I think that is, I can say it's the cheapest one in the U.S. to do a training in biostatistics, because it costs $5,500 for the 12 months. And that is like $300 per student or $800 if you are an international student. Okay? The only thing that is not included is the health insurance, which is around a different issue. Okay? So, of course, you go to... So if there is people coming from another state, they have to pay the out-of-state tuition. But if you get the competitive scholarship, even if it is $1,000, then you qualify to be as an institution. So it's a very good deal in Texas for that. The Texas law in that regard is good. Okay? So this is the phone number and the contact information for the Office of Student Affairs. And then if you want more information from our Department of Biostatistics, Stacy Will is the one who handles all the admissions in our program. Her phone number is there. But it is in your handouts. And then this is Dr. Tilly, who is the director right now in our department. And clinical trial, Parkinson's disease, health disparities research, minority health, moving disorders, stroke. She is very well known, and she, of course, you will love to work with her if you join our program. So that's basically what I want you to invite you to join the venture of. Join us in this career path if this looks like an interesting path to you. Okay? So this is the center for those of you who haven't been in Houston there. Okay? Any questions? Did I attract you or not? Did I fail in selling the biostat?
So would you say that most of the research is more of
applied mathematics?
Yeah, so, for example, like something I'm very interested in is like diffusions, mm-hmm. right? Which, you know, an SDE, mm-hmm. which, you know, so like how much does that kind of stuff pop up in people's work in biostats? Because I know that, you know, there's some of the machinery, there's a lot of abstractness, like using staging things, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious.
If you are working like with a radiologist, if you will, it will go there, right? So it depends on is the where did you get the data, and if that data it has the diffusion. So yes, there are fields with that, but then you have to really like that in order to go that field. Yes, that makes sense.
Somehow, like you end up like you sort of. So is it natural that you like it's not like you want to work in this application to do it, but you like. The application that uses them?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, in my case, I love the fact of being able to evaluate what treatment is better than the other. Uh-huh. So I like clinical trials, right? So, but I don't care the clinical trial. It could be in a stroke. It could be in cardiovascular disease. It could be in Parkinson's. You know the methods. So the only thing that it changes is the population. But once you know the math behind the disease, it's irrelevant a little bit. Does it make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's why I really like this profession for that. And I don't lose my math skills. I work with, especially teaching, you also get more and more updated and all that, right? And the publications are the driving too, because we have to keep up with the literature. So it's not like we are updated and I learn it and I forget it, right? So that doesn't work. But there is tons of field. Like I was telling, the big data, right now there is a lot of big data coming out from the genetics components. And that is, I mean, everything is empty in the sense all the math here is like brand new, because genetics has started to collect the data like in less than 10 years. So all the math around here, huge open space for everybody.
Is there a way we can get a copy of the policy?
Yes, I'm going to update it. There was one typo, so I would send it to Corey, and he will distribute it, right?
Would you say this work is more business or academic oriented?
It could be academia, it could be government, or it could be, private sector,
okay. So
industry. It depends on what you like.
Okay.
But the good thing is that it's jobs in all of them. So, like, I mean, if you go to the website that I mentioned it, the AMSAT, is there is no one time in all of these three websites. You can go anytime, and you're going to go to jobs. I always see jobs needed, right? It's amazing. And I get calls, is do you have a students? There are very few students who are doing it. So it is a really low pool because, like you are a very special pool, right? You have been in a math department, so you have all the skills, right? Now, if you want in the future to do new theorems or to prove new scientific concepts in math, then you are going to go into probably a more math path, but then you have to come up with also the statistics. Now, the salaries for mathematics and the salaries for statistics versus the salaries for mathematics are completely different. Completely, completely different. So the starting point from a math is around 60, 65, right? From a statistics is 70, 75. But then when you go to biostatistics, it's 100. So it pays off. And this is academia. So you go to industry, like for example, I was trying to hire one person with a master's degree, and the starting salary was 120 because he went to biostatistics. So the pays amazing. Good. We cannot compete with them, unfortunately. But if you really like a private sector, that's a good will. I didn't like private sector. I didn't like a pharmaceutical company. Why? Because it's repetitive. It's very repetitive. And I didn't like the repetitive. But there's people who like the repetitive, and that's good. Don't take me wrong.
Can you know what you mean by repetitive?
So, for example, you work in a pharmaceutical company, and let's suppose that they are working only in developing new drugs or new devices. So the only thing that you do is evaluating devices. It's only evaluating drugs. So they change the drug, but you have to do the same thing over. So new drug, same thing. New drug, same thing. So that's what I mean, repetitive.
So pharmaceutical companies not releasing certain trials of their drugs, were there any ethical issues that you had?
No, with ethical issues, no. No, the good and the bad of being in this field is the only thing is challenging. Like when I was in graduate school, I did a program to evaluate if secondhand smoking was associated with the risk of cancer, as my a research project that I was working on. So I submit, I evaluate it, I reproduce the results of the PI, and I reproduce the results of the paper. I graduated. 2 years later, the PI contacted me and said, hey, do you have the program? Do you remember the program that you did 2 years ago? I'm like, no, but what happened? So the tobacco company sued the four centers in the U.S. that they produced the report where it says, sorry, you smoke, it's associated with cancer, and therefore they sued the tobacco company. The tobacco company didn't want that article to be distributed to the scientific community. So they went to the judge and request the data and request the program to prove that we did the wrong analysis. So the PI have to submit all the programs, and she was called by the judge to evaluate, hey, did you do the right analysis? Did you write the right protocol? Did you do any mistakes? All of this. And the PI won, and that's why we had money from the companies, because that too was against them, and they have to pay for those, for that association of secondhand smoking. But that's the only thing that is close to an ethical issue where you are questioned what you do. But if you did everything ethically, you don't have a problem. This is not a pharmaceutical problem. I don't have an issue with the pharmaceutical companies. FDA will control everything very well, so I don't have a problem with that. It's just the repetitiveness for me that I didn't find it attractive. But that doesn't mean that someone else does. And government is a different, like working with the Census Bureau and trying to get estimators of health outcome or health statistics is really good. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you so much.